Hello, everyone. So today, I'm going to talk about three ways to work better with GitHub. So yesterday, how many of you saw Hanselman's keynote yesterday? We talked a lot about all the open source greatness that they're doing. It's really amazing to me, having come from Microsoft, to see that the way that Microsoft and the .NET community is embracing open source, but not only open source, doing it on GitHub. They're designing the next version of C# on GitHub. The next generation of ASP.NET is being built on GitHub, the .NET framework, .NET Core, and NuGet, the package manager. All of that is now being developed on GitHub. And a huge number of community-driven .NET open source projects are also now on GitHub. And these two guys are very excited about that. I was like, the other room, everyone just laughed. I was like, oh, they must be watching. So there's this idea that, like, the way, great innovation happens is you have this solitary hacker who kind of goes into a cave and he emerges with some transcendent new idea, this great new thing. And that idea, as we know, and I talked about this in my last talk, is largely a myth. That's not the way it works. The way great things happen, great code, is written by teams working together and collaborating, and these days, often on GitHub. So how do you join in on all this wanton collaboration? How do you contribute to these projects? And how do you do work on your own code in GitHub? So in this talk, I kind of want to focus on that. For a lot of people, when they first approach Git, it's a lot like this gentleman here who tries to jump on this ball. The guy jumping, that's the one who's brand new to Git. The woman who kicks the ball away, that's Git. And the one standing triumphantly at the end, raising her hand in victory, that's hopefully you after you've mastered Git and GitHub, after you've learned a few tips from this talk. So I want you to be awesome like this guy. I want you to feel powerful when you're using Git and GitHub and feel in control, because a lot of people who are new to Git and GitHub don't feel in control. And when you understand some of the principles of Git, which it could be a whole talk in its own right, you start to really understand that there is an underlying simplicity there. And so in this talk, I'm going to teach you three critical ways to integrate GitHub into your development workflow and feel like a GitHub pro. Now, there's a huge amount to learn, and I can only give you a taste of it, but what I hope to do is kind of give you some ideas of areas that you can go and investigate further after this talk. And don't feel bad if you don't catch everything. I'll provide some resources at the end or on my blog afterwards. But first, I want to tell you who am I. And he says, I don't know. So my name is Phil Hack, and I work at GitHub. I'm an engineering director, and I'm in charge of three teams, the team that builds Atom, the text editor, GitHub Desktop, and the editor. We have a new team, Editor Tools, that does, for example, the GitHub integration into Visual Studio. So I used to work at Microsoft prior to GitHub. I worked on ASP.NET MVC, and I worked on NuGet, the package manager. And our mascot at GitHub is the Octocat, and I was at a conference, and someone in the audience drew this picture of me as an Octocat, and I loved it, so I've taken it. But since then, I've had a laser surgery in my eyes, like this guy, and so now I don't wear glasses anymore, so I'd love to get a new drawing. Anyways, afterwards, I'm on @hacked on GitHub and on Twitter, and I have a blog at hack.com, and on my blog, I'll try to post some of the links of the stuff I've talked about. But first, I'd like to understand where you all are in regards to Git and source control.
Oh.
Yeah. So raise your hand if, how many of you use Git? Okay. How many of you don't use Git or never use Git? Or don't use it every day? Okay, just a few of you. Okay. How many of you prefer just using Git on the command line? Okay, how many of you prefer GUIs? Oh, okay, this is a mixture. How many of you use both? All right, good. A lot of what I'll show kind of integrates both the command line and the GUI and kind of show how they can interact together. Any of you here use GitHub Desktop? So GitHub for Mac, GitHub for Windows? Okay, just a few. How many of you here use SourceTree? Okay, more. TFS? A lot of you. And anyone here use Mercurial? Nope, okay. Good. No, I'm just kidding. How many of you like raising your hands as a form of exercise? No, nobody. Okay. So what are the three ways to integrate GitHub into your workflow? Oh, shoot, I forgot to start my clock, so I have no idea where we are, but I'll just start now. Okay, so there's Git, such as the Git command line. There's the GitHub GUIs, like desktop and Visual Studio, and GitHub.com, the website. But these aren't three distinct tools that you know you use one at a time, right? A normal workflow kind of goes through like end-to-end, back and forth, in a natural fashion. And so in this talk, I'll kind of walk through an actual workflow and kind of highlight key features and some of the new features of GitHub that you might not be aware of. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Git. If you're used to Subversion or TF version control or Visual Source Safe, yikes, Git can feel very different. There's a lot of habits that you have to adopt and change from using more of those connected version controls because Git is distributed. When you do a clone, you pull the whole code base down. It's a very different model, but when you understand that model, you realize it's very powerful. For example, creating branches is cheap, merging them is easy compared to doing that in Subversion. I once talked to someone who's like, why would I need branches? You know, they're painful to use. And I kind of pointed out, well, branches are nice, the reason that you don't like using branches is because they were painful in Subversion, not because they're not useful. And when you use Git, you start to learn like, oh, branches are extremely useful. They're very easy to create. And I'll show you an example of why they create. Also, you should always be committing. Commit often because you can always fix up your commits later and before you share your commits with the world. And think of commits like if you're playing a video game and they're a save point, right? You want to save your progress in the game all the time so that if you die, you can go back to the last point. Commits are a lot like that. You want to be committing all the time so that if you make a mistake or something takes you to a place that you're not happy with, you can just go right back to where you were before. So rather than get into the underlying theory of Git, I'm going to show it in action. How many of you are Windows, primarily use Windows for development? Okay. Most of you. Okay. Anyone here primarily use Macs? Just one person. Okay, so this part will be less interesting to you, but traditionally getting Git on Windows has been kind of a challenge. And so I'm going to talk about how to get Git on your Windows machine. But first, I want to tell a joke. How do you generate a random string? You put a Windows user in front of VI and tell him to exit. Now, I have someone tell this joke, and he said Emacs, but I think the real joke is VI. It used to be like the way you would get Git on Windows is you'd install msysgit or Git for Windows, and it had a lot of problems because it didn't really, it asked you all these questions that you had no idea how to answer if you've never used Git before, and then it set the default editor to VI, and so users who would try to create their first commit would suddenly be stuck in there forever, perhaps to this day. And so what we did is with GitHub for Windows, we packaged Git in a way that's portable and in a way that sets reasonable, sane defaults for you if you're a Windows user. And that way, for example, we set Notepad as your editor. I think the recent versions of Git for Windows, I think, are starting to make these changes as well. So, I'm only used to using it from desktop, so I have to play around with the default install. But we're working closely with the Git for Windows team to look at ways that we can start to collaborate better and have a more shared experience. So, I really love this. Today, the best and easiest way to... I need to extend Windows P. Just switching to, I think I have to stop the presentation. And how do I exit the slideshow? I just think it's just exit. Did that? OK, okay, for some reason this is not exiting my slideshow. There's a good, okay, I will close. Did that work? All right. So I need to, oh, I know what I did wrong. I extended my desktop. I want to duplicate it. There we go. Okay. Okay, so if you've never used Git on Windows, the easiest way to get Git is to go to desktop.github.com and see that blue button there? Click that blue button and install our desktop client. And I'll show an example of what happens when you do that. It will set up a couple shortcuts on your machine. So you'll see here there's this GitHub icon and then Git shell. So if you double-click the Git shell, that sets up, it'll launch in a second. It gives you Git on the command line here in PowerShell, which is our default. So Git, you can see that Git is there. The desktop app gives you this welcome experience. So if you have a GitHub account, you can enter it. So I use an account for demos called Fake Hacked, so it's not the real hack, because I want to make sure that I don't mess up my real stuff on accident. See, this is not the real hack. I'll just say fake hack. And you notice here we scan your hard drive as part of the welcome. So we call this the welcome wizard, and we like look for existing repositories, and we can add them to it. But I'm going to skip that. And one of the cool things about desktop when you first launch it is that we have this little tutorial that you can go through. So we'll actually walk you through. Oops, I didn't mean to click learn more. So we kind of walk you through the steps of how to use the app, what these buttons mean, and so on. And so it's a really nice experience to try that out. One cool thing is you probably heard that Windows 10, they're working on Bash for Windows 10. Right now that's not widely available, but if you want Bash, you can go in here, click Git Bash, hit Save. And then the next time you launch the shell, it'll be in Bash. And in fact, we have something that Hanselman dubbed Doom mode if you use the tilde key. So how many of you played Doom back in the day? Anyone? So you hit tilde to get to the console. So in desktop, if you hit tilde, it launches the console. And now I have a Bash prompt. Once the Windows 10 Bash is widely available, we'll probably want to launch that instead for those who have Windows 10. But for now, if you need Bash, desktop is one way to get that. What I like to do is customize mine, and I use something called Console Z, and if I can remember the location of it. And so that when I launch desktop, I get a nice console experience like this. All right. So now that I have the shell, let's play around in the shell a little bit. This is where we get to Git command line. And one of the things I want to show is another app that I wrote called Cgit. So Cgit is something I wrote to be an educational tool for people who are learning Git, because a lot of Git graphical interfaces only show like your current branch and maybe the master branch. Desktop shows, for example, the master branch and your current branch. But sometimes when you're learning Git, it's kind of helpful to see everything, the entire graph of your repository all at once. And so Cgit does that. For example, let me browse to, I'm going to go to a dev demo, Git demo. So git init dot is the way you initialize a directory. And then I'm going to browse here and load that repo. Demo. Okay. So there's obviously nothing there, but I'm going to create a file. We'll use old school echo command, hola latam, or dev days. Pipe that into readme.md. So if you're on GitHub, typically you want to add a readme file. Markdown-based README file. So that created a file, and you can see if I do git status, we have one untracked file. Typically, if you want to commit the file, you will stage the file. Yeah, dash A, git commit, dash M, and give a, normally you want to give a nice descriptive commit message. Actually, I'm going to just run git commit, and you'll see that it launches Notepad, in my case, Notepad plus Notepad 2, but it launches Notepad rather than VI. So that's one benefit of us setting it up, and you can configure your, we look at what your default text editor is on the machine, and we always use that. So if you change your default text editor to something else, we'll launch that. And so normally you want a nice descriptive commit message. For demo purposes, I'm just going to use the letter A. And now you see that on the right side there, A just popped up. Let me just move that here, and let's scale that up a little bit. Oops. Where did it go? Uh-oh. There we go. Okay. So let's create another file. Or let's add more text to it. So I'm going to open up the README. Okay. And then I'm going to do git commit dash am b. So dash a says, oh, at stage all the changes, and m is, you know, specify the commit message. And what you'll see is that it automatically, nice. It automatically created, you know, cget updates shows you the whole graph. One thing to note is that currently I'm on the branch master, which is highlighted in green, and head always points to, like, sort of what's in your working directory. What's cool about Git is that, you know, branches are super cheap. So I'm going to create a new branch. And you notice here that, so you can use a branch command to create a new branch, and new branch is just a pointer to the same commit. So that's all a branch is a pointer to a commit. So it's a file with the SHA address of that commit. And that's why branching is cheap. It doesn't have to copy anything in order to create a branch. Now, in the real world, you probably do some, here, let's delete that branch. And I'm going to do checkout dash B, new branch. And what that does is that creates a new branch, but also switches to it. Now, one of the things you'll notice here in my shell is that new branch is showing up on the prompt, right? How's that happen? Well, that's something that we include in the Git shell that we ship with desktop, something called PoshGit, which was created by Keith Dalby. I almost forgot his name. That would be very awkward. But he created this open source project called PoshGit. It's a PowerShell module that adds all these interesting enhancements to your shell experience when you're using Git. For example, tab completion. So if I want to check out a branch, let's create another new branch. Now, if I want to do git checkout and I hit tab, you see, I'll keep hitting tab. Foo, master, new branch, head, fetch head, orange head. And so I can cycle through the branches. I can cycle through commands. Let's say all the commands that start with C and just hit tab. And then, you know, obviously I can cycle through all the git commands. But what's nice is that it analyzes your repo, and it gives you tab completion for branch names, SHAs, things like that. So very useful addition. It kind of helps guide and your usage of Git. All right. So let me commit on this new branch. So I'm going to echo be nice to the contributing guide. You make a dir. So I'm going to talk about this in a second, though. One of the new features of GitHub that not a lot of people know is that we now support this .github directory. So some of the meta files that you often have in your repository, you can put in there. And I'll show you how that might work. Okay, be nice. So we're going to create a contributing guide. So this is the guide to how to contribute to your repo. And I need to make sure that that's in GitHub. There we go. OMC. Git commit dash n c. Okay. I should probably scroll this up a little bit. Okay, so one thing to note here is that, you know, now I've added a new commit on new branch. Master still pointing at the at commit B. So let's switch to master. Git checkout master. And then you can see that it just switched right back there and it made all the changes in my working directory to get me back to that point. And then I'm going to do a commit here, echo foo. Oh, shoot. You notice I get up arrow to go back into the history of my commands. And I want to do D. All right. So here you can see that we've actually branched. And this is one of the nice things about Sega is that you can, when we talk about branches, you can actually see the branching nature of this. So this commit was on master. Master's pointing to D. Foo is still pointing, you know, back at B. And it's hard to tell because of the layout here, but new branch is pointing at, here, let's see if I can move this around. Oh, wow, that's fast. Okay. It's a little sensitive, as you can see. Woo-hoo. Okay, there we go. Close enough. I need to work on that. So Seagate is an open source project. I accept contributions. So if any of you are good at graphing and GUIs, I would love your help.
How did you connect to Git? Do you use any API of Git? Have you tracked the changes in your
route? Oh, so the question is, how is Seagate connecting to Git? So what I'm doing is I'm using a file system monitor on the Git directory to monitor changes. And then I use libgit2sharp to actually read the changes and populate the graph. So libgit2sharp is a open source, another open source library. It's written in C#, and it's bindings for a library called libgit2, which is a C library for manipulating the Git object model. All right, so let's move along here, and I'm going to commit dash. I'm going to merge this foo branch into master or new branch. So at this point, we've diverged, and at this point we want to say, hey, I want all those changes on new branch back in master. So I git merge new branch. And you can see that it creates this merge commit here, which reconciles all the changes. But let me reset this. I want to show you something interesting here. Oops. And when I reset, you notice that we just move the pointer back, and now nothing is pointing to that merge commit. But the merge commit is actually still there. It's still in the repo, but nobody's pointing to it. And so this is often why, when people say don't, if you feel like you lost something, it might still be there. Until I run a git gc, so gc garbage collection, just like you have in C#, every commit is there. Every commit is immutable. And if I want to get to that commit, you can use a command called git reflog. And you can see here that, there's my merge commit. It's the address is F389500. I don't know why my mouse is so slow. All right. So, I could do something like this. You know what? I didn't mean to reset. I actually want to go back to that commit. So I can git reset F389500--hard. And now master's back to the merge commit. So reflog is a really useful command. To undoing bad mistakes. If you've ever I didn't mean to make that commit or I didn't mean to reset that, then you can go to reflog, find the commit. Just don't run git gc until you really mean to. Okay. So not everyone likes the command line. A lot of people a lot of people like to use graphical user interfaces. And so that's one of the reasons why we built desktop. But desktop isn't meant to be the end-all, be-all Git client. It's really meant to be a GitHub client. And so we kind of focus on the GitHub experience. So, it doesn't have a button for every possible Git feature. But we try to create a client that will help you with the contribute to projects on GitHub and focus on the features that are most helpful for that workflow. And if you need to do something exotic or unique within Git, you know, we make it easy to drop into the command line. So, for example, let's publish this repository to GitHub. So, you know, I started working in the command line. One neat thing about using the Git shell that we provide is that we this makes the GitHub command available. So I can do something like GitHub dot, where dot is the path to a repo. And when I run that, it's going to send a message to the existing desktop client if it's running. If it's not running, it'll launch it. And then what it does is it adds the current, the path to as a repo to the thing. So you notice here that now Git demo's here. I can see my commits. And I can publish this to GitHub right from here. So and now that's publishing to GitHub. I think that that was fast. Let's check it out. And there it is. So the repo's there. You notice the README is there. And so in the past, this would have taken a lot of steps to get your code from your machine up to GitHub. You'd have to go to GitHub, create it, check out the URL, initialize the repo, set the origin, and then push everything up. But with the desktop app, we make that really easy to get that up there. Okay. So let's, you know, the next step, you know, now we have this repo. We want to, it's nice to track the work we're going to do with issues. So let's create an issue. So remember that contributing.md doc that I added to the .github directory? We can see here that because I have that, this shows this. Please review the contributing guidelines when anyone creates an issue on your repo. As you can imagine, a lot of people don't click on that link. They ignore this. And you know, this issue doesn't provide you much guidance on how to log a proper issue. So one thing you can do is you can go to your .github directory. And let's add a new file called issue template.md. You can see I've done this before. And what we can do here is create a template for people who are logging issues so that you force them to think about some of the things that they should, right? So for example, you might tell them, before you log an issue, please make sure to, and then let's give them a task list. So this syntax I'm showing here, let me zoom in here, it's a little bit hard to see. Oh, why is it doing? So somehow I changed the magnifier to that, and I don't know how to get out of that. Okay, forget magnification. All right. Oh, you know what? Let's use Chrome can zoom in, right? There we go. Repro steps. What did you expect to happen? Kind of like every good bug report, right? What are the steps to do it? What did you expect to happen? What actually happened? And then create issue template. And what's nice is, as you can see here, I can add files to my repo directly from github.com. So like for little things like this where it's just text files, instead of going through the whole process of doing the command line and, you know, pushing and all that, just do it right in the browser. And so, oh, this is funny because I'm doing this, so I'm currently doing this from my hacked account. And what's nice is because I don't have, so hacked doesn't have access to fake hacked, it gives me this create pull request button. So I can do that and hit create pull request. And you notice I do this all from the browser. And so this is really great for things like documentation, right? Like, I'll show you something really quick that I do on hack.com. So hack.com, I mentioned, is my blog. So I write a lot of blog posts, and on every blog post, there's this edit link. Oh, what does that do? So I click edit, and it brings up that page in GitHub. So you can go here, and you can be like, you know what? You misspelled this word, type all this stuff, create the commit, and then submit a pull request to me, and I'll get a pull request for typo changes. People help me all the time. because I misspell things all the time. It's really nice. Okay, so we have this. Let's go back to, so I have this other browser instance in incognito mode, and I'm logged in as fake hacked here. So I can go to my repo here. Oops. Git demo. Okay, I'm a little too zoomed in. Let's get real here. All right. And we go to pull requests. And I can see that, oh, someone issued me a pull request. I'm going to merge that and say, hey, thank you. We should say thank you. And one thing I like to do when I'm doing this kind of thing is I have this third-party extension called GitHub Selfie, and it adds this button. This is not a button that we have, the selfie button. This is caused by an extension. So you can actually record a selfie right from, so let's, I wonder if I can do this without, so give a thumbs up. I like to give a thumbs up. All right. All right, so let's see if that, I hope that works. So it's uploading. You see that it adds this thing and it's uploading and it'll eventually replace that with the URL to the animated GIF of you guys doing a thumbs up. And let's preview that. And there we go. You guys are now, part of that, part of the history of this commit. Okay, but so why did I create that issue template? Well, the next person who comes along and creates an issue on this repo, wait, whoops. What happened there?
Your file's misnamed.
Oh, thank you. that's it, okay. So it's really important that you name this file correctly. And can I correct this from, yes, okay. So here's what we'll do. How did that happen? That's weird. Okay. See, I told you that I misspell things all the time. So let's see. Let's do a helpful commit message. Learn to spell. And I'll commit this directly to the master branch because this is my repo now. And now when I go to create an issue, you can see that we take the contents of the issue template and we populate the issue. So this is very useful for you know, helping guide people to log better issue bug reports. And you know, you see that little weird syntax I did? What that does is that creates these checkboxes. And so if I say like, oh, you know, I did this and I did, oh, actually, I guess checking doesn't work in issues. Oh, because it's preview. No, wait. Ah, so test. Okay, so now if I check these off, and then I go to the edit that issue, you can see that we actually update the markdown with the checks. And so I can go through the steps of each of these steps, and I can check them off as I go along, and we keep that up in sync. Okay. So I want to put on my maintainer hat for a moment. And you know, how many of you maintain open source projects here? Okay, just a couple. So if you have an open source project, one of the things you often run into is that you get a lot of people logging issues, and a lot of times they say the same, you know, it's a known issue, or you find yourself repeating yourself. And one of the things you can do now with GitHub is you can go to settings, and, actually, your settings. So the settings for your accounts. And we have the save replies section here. And let's see. For example, for GitHub Desktop, we often ask people to we create a log file. So if your app creates a log file, you might tell people, hey, please send me your log file. So I'll add a save reply. And so the next time someone, you know, logs an issue, so let's go to fake hacked, git demo, issues. So someone wrote test, and I'm like, well, I don't know what that means. I can click this button here. And that loads my saved reply. So I have log file, more info. So let's like click log file. And then that's kind of useful if you find yourself repeating yourself a lot. You now have the ability to kind of create these canned responses and reply to issues with that. OK. So let's do something more interesting than a repo that has no code. Let's create a Visual Studio project. So I'll load Visual Studio 2015. I probably should have loaded it before the talk because it takes a little bit of time. And one of the things I'm going to do is in desktop, I'm going to create a branch. So one of the key principles of Git is before you do any kind of work, before you fix a bug, start a new feature, you should create a branch. And so you can do it through here. I'll call it console branch. And you can see here that in desktop, on the graph, we show that we're starting a new branch. The dotted circle means this is where the next commit will go once you make a commit. And what I'm going to do here is, okay, now that Visual Studio's launched, still launching. Okay, here we go. So let's create a new project. I'm just going to do a simple console project. Because the next thing I want to show is how not only can you get your Visual Studio project up on GitHub, but have GitHub set up a continuous integration using GitHub connecting to a third-party service. So this is this flow is really nice if you use third-party build systems. You'll want to watch this for a second. Okay, demo. Oh, no. What did I do? Okay, so my pinky accidentally hit the enter key before I was done typing, so now I have to wait for this to create this console app. And I'll stand here awkwardly while I wait for this to finish. You guys having a good day? Okay. Let's try this again. You know what I'll do? Instead of starting over, I'm just going to move this into the Git directory that we had already created. So if I remember correctly, this was cdev. Okay, let's make sure we saved everything. Okay, I'm going to cut this and paste this in a Git demo. Oh, Visual Studio has a lock on it. Let's try again. Okay, great. So now when I come over here, you can see that it's reflecting all the changes. Okay. Now, one of the things you'll notice here is that it's including things that you don't want in your Git directory. So like, we don't want the temporary generated files. We don't want stuff in the bin and obj directory. So if you use GitHub Desktop, we actually to create your repo, we actually set up a proper git ignore file that's useful for C# or .NET developers. But if you have an existing repo, you can actually go into repository settings and we say, hey, add a default git ignore file, and OK. And now you see that we add this git ignore file, and it just removed a bunch of the stuff that you don't want in your repo. Now, let's go into this. Let's launch this again. OK. So I'm going to launch this application in here, and let's actually write some code. Like, you know, we're building this project. We want to write some code. I have this bad feeling that one of the third-party extensions that I installed is making Visual Studio start really, really slow. Yes, it's, you know, when in doubt, blame third-party extensions, right? Because like when I was doing a dry run, like it was launching a lot faster. But then for my previous talk, I had installed a couple extensions. And now I'm just up here making excuses. But keep in mind, I didn't build Visual Studio, so. No, I love Visual Studio. Like, I don't want them mad at me. All right, it's still loading. Oh, here we go. OK. All right, so, you know, here I am, I'm building a project. I want to, you know, let's write some code. You know, just for the purpose of the demo, we're not going to do anything too interesting. We're just like, hey, console.writeline. Or, sure, write. Hola, Peru. Okay. So we got this program. And one interesting thing about Git is that, you know, I've just been working. I'm not thinking about Git. I'm working. But now I have all these changes, right? I have a git ignore file. I've got the solution, and I got the code that I'm writing. And these are independent changes. And one of the things that's really nice about Git is to have a history that kind of reflects like the steps that you took to get to the point where you are. And the reason why history is important in Git is that there's commands like git bisect. I won't demo git bisect, but I'll just tell you about it. What git bisect does is basically a binary search through your commit history to search for the cause of a bug. So for example, let's say you find out that, oh, this thing stopped working like two releases ago. I know it worked like way back here. I know it's not working here. Which commit introduced the bug? So what you do is you type in git bisect and it'll ask when's the last known good, and you give it that commit, and what's the currently bad, and you'd say, oh, the head or current commit. And then it'll check out a commit right in the middle, and then you run your test and you say, oh, is that good or is that bad? And then it'll keep going and going and going, and eventually it'll narrow down the commit that introduced the bug. Now, that's an amazingly useful tool for tracking down when a bug was introduced, but it's only useful if your commit histories are, each commit is sort of a logical, coherent commit, like of related changes. If you throw in a bunch of unrelated changes in all your commits, then that tool becomes less useful. And people reviewing your history or people reviewing your code, well, 5 minutes? Okay. People reviewing your code will have a tough time with it. So what you can do with desktop that's nice is you can, commit just one file at a time. So let's say, hey, let's add a git ignore. We can also add multiple files at a time. But this program, like I want to have the commit that creates the basic project be different from the commit that adds the code. So I can actually go in here and do something called a partial commit. So I'm going to uncheck that line. And so watch what happens when I do this commit, create project. And now you notice that that created a commit that had everything except this line, and now I can just commit this line. So this is called something called partial commits. And this is one of those areas where even if you love using the git command line, doing partial commits from the command line is kind of a pain compared to using a GUI. So if I go back to the history here, we can see that I now have three commits, right? Add a git on this branch, add a git ignore, create a project, and you notice here program doesn't have the code, and then I have the write the code commit. So partial commits, very useful. Another useful thing is if you want to, now I have this code in this branch, I want to create a pull request, I can just click pull request, type in some things. We have at mention support in here, so this is really useful, so I can say, hey, Hacked, take a look at this. And then I can, encourage him with ta-da, with emojis, and we also support referencing issues. This fixes number 2. And what's nice about that is when this pull request is merged, it'll close issue number 2, the one I referenced. You can also reference issues in your commits, and GitHub will connect the commit to the issue that it fixed. So that becomes a really useful way of, that provides a lot of metadata so that you could start to generate release notes, things like that. So here, it created the pull request. I can go review it. And let's zoom out. Okay, so here's the pull request. You can see the emoji and it referenced Hacked and all that. And but we have a problem here. It says, this branch has no conflicts with the base branch, but what if I was to do something like this, like, oh, I made a typo, this isn't going to build, but I go ahead and I commit that. Whoops. And then we'll sync that. So the sync button, pulls down any changes on the branch and then rebases your current changes against that, so it pushes your change, keeps you in sync with that branch. So now I do that and I come back here, and as far as GitHub's concerned, go ahead and merge this, but that's not how real software development happens, right? We should have some checks, like the project should compile, your unit test should pass. So one of the cool things you can do here is set up a continuous integration for your repo. So, oops, let me switch to... let's go to settings. And then I'm going to go to webhooks and services. And we have this new GitHub integrations directory. So you can browse a directory. And one item in the directory that I'm a fan of if you're doing .NET development is AppVeyor, because it's super easy. It integrates really nicely into GitHub. So you can see here, like, I'm already added to there. I thought I had removed myself from AppVeyor so that I could redo this demo, but when I was practicing, it didn't remove it. But if I go to AppVeyor now, so normally that would, if you never connected AppVeyor, that would be a button that connects it, sets up your account using your GitHub account in AppVeyor. So the next time you go to AppVeyor, you can click sign in, and you can use your GitHub account to sign in. So I'll click GitHub. And, you know, welcome to your new AppVeyor account. So if I click new project, I can authorize just my public or my public and private. And we go through the whole authorization workflow here. And let's see. It's very secure. And here you see that it queried GitHub for my account information and said, oh, like, here's your list of repos. So let's set up Git demo, and let's go ahead and run a new build, and let's check out the pull requests. Oh, look, update program. Nice. What happened to the merge button? Oh. Keep switching to the wrong account. Thank you. Okay, so let's re-push to console branch. Git demo git. Okay. Wait, why am I doing it from there? Yes. Yeah, that looks good. Test. So now what should happen is we can see that in a few seconds when that syncs. Ah, I gotta commit. All right. One problem with setting up after the fact is I'm not sure how to git reset. Okay, git push. We'll do a force push here. So force pushing is generally a very bad idea, except to branches where you know you're the only one working on it. Okay. But for the sake of demo, we can see here that, what happened? All right. So I must have made a mistake in that workflow. But what should happen is that we should start seeing, this will start being built in AppVeyor, and then we get these commit statuses. You notice how I did the force push? Maybe you don't want people doing that to your master branch, because that will mess up everything for everybody else. So one of the things you can do is you can go to branches here, and you can actually protect your branches. So for example, I can say master will protect this branch. We can require certain status checks to pass before merging. So for example, you know, I want to make sure that everything builds on AppVeyor before you're allowed to push merge that branch. And I can even include an administrator. So like, you know, if you're an administrator, you don't get off the hook. You have to follow the rules. Okay. All right, so I'm running out of time. So I'm going to show one more thing. Switch back to my... okay. play. So I had this really intricate structure for all my talks. How do you get to presenter mode? I always forget this. Slideshow, there you go. So I'm running out of time. I'll show one more thing real quick, and then if you have any questions, you can follow up with me afterwards. Why is this not working? There we go. Wow, my machine's having problems. So one of the things that we have here, I'll try to get to this real quick. It's behaving weirdly. All right, forget it. So one of the other things I didn't get a chance to show you is, oh, now it's working. Okay, is that we have a GitHub extension for Visual Studio. And this was a really cool thing that we collaborated with the Visual Studio team. So for example, if you install Visual Studio 2015, during the installation period, if you click this little custom thing, you can... I just want to make sure you find it. This brings you to the customization dialog, and one thing to note when you actually go through the installation experience, these arrows are not there, so only in my slides. And so you check that, and that'll install GitHub extension for Visual Studio. You can also get it through the tools extension manager, and that'll help you. I just like this one. That'll help you get Visual Studio a GitHub extension Visual Studio that helps you. Log into GitHub through, set up clone repos, and it handles the two-factor authentication. So if you use 2FA, which I highly recommend, it sets that all up so you don't have to go and create personal access tokens. So apologies for the demo fails, but thank you all for your patience and your time.